There is no love without suffering. Ariel Dombasli.
Was going to resupply in Tahoe City after day five. And it was amazing because I proved to myself that I can do so much, but it was also one of the hardest things I've ever done because you've never felt like a, well, I never had felt more like a failure until I was crying in my tent at 10 p.m. looking up on Google, when should I quit a through hike? Because I had hiked 18 miles that day, had seen smoke from the Dixie Fire coming over Tahoe from the other side of the trail, didn't have any clean water because there was a toxic algae bloom in the lake that I was sleeping next to, had heard bears like nearby me or had heard some sounds from some animals at some point, and then didn't eat dinner because I didn't have enough water basically to cook dinner. And it was really hard.
I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod.
Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Lace up those boots and sling on the pack for a romp through trails, short and long. With your host and Renaissance man, Doc, it's time to embrace the suck.
Welcome back to another week on the Trail Dirtbags and Hiker Trash. I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Let's start off with a reminder. If you are enjoying the podcast, take just a minute, help us out, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're not enjoying the pod, well, just go ahead and keep that to yourself. Well, constant listeners, we have big news to share with you this week. Yes, I am very excited to announce that we have doubled the staff here at the John Freakin' Muir Pod by adding on the talents of Angela Hu, who joins the team as an intern. And when I say team, I mean me. Welcome to the podcast, Angela. How's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, thank you. Did I get the last name correct?
Yeah, you did actually. It's Hu, just like that. Hu.
Okay. Yeah. I took a leap there. So glad I nailed it. Okay. Hey, speaking of names, do you have a trail name?
I do in a technical sense, but I'm not sure if I count it as my own trail name. When I went on one of my first backpacking trips in Yosemite with my best friends from high school, they gave me the name Lupin because that's my favorite flower and that's what I want to get tattooed on me later on in life. So I technically have the trail name Lupin, but I feel like flowers are sort of basic. And then I just finished Section J of the PCT 2 days ago. And my other friend gave me the nickname Lightning because I hike really fast at least in comparison to our group, I was like going at a pretty steady pace the entire time. And then also I liked a skinny dip. So he combined those two things into calling me Lightning. But I'm not sure exactly yet if I want to adopt either of those names, especially like when I do my first through hike in the future.
Okay. So I think the first time we talked, when you approached me about becoming an intern, and we're going to talk about that in just a second. I think you told me that your trail name was Lupin. And I always thought, you know, that it had to do with some kind of werewolf reference or some kind of wolf reference. I think that's kind of, I don't know the meaning of the name, but I just assumed that. I didn't know it was a flower.
Oh, no, it's actually a flower that's native to California. It's one of the native wildflowers to California. And I grew up in Monterey Bay, so that was a flower that I always saw growing up whenever I would go hiking. They're like these really beautiful, small flowers that are purple and white. And I don't know, they hold really large significance to me. Just like how the California poppy holds significance to a lot of people, the lupin has held a lot for me.
Okay. So yeah, I learned something tonight already. Very good. Thanks. Now I'm interested to hear how lightning is connected to skinny dipping.
Yeah, that's a funny one. So my friend, I don't actually do this. I don't flash people because I'm very conscious of other people's norms and what they prefer, but I really enjoy skinny dipping. And so the entire time my friends and I were hiking Section J, I was trying to convince the only guy in our group to go skinny dipping with us because he wouldn't. And then finally on the second or third day, he did go with us. And so like lightning in the sense that I flash people, but I don't do that because I'm like cognizant of people's preferences to not see nude people in the wild, even though I think that in like the backpacking community and the outdoor community in general, like nudity is not as big of an issue as it is in like modern America, I would say. But that's how like skinny dipping has to do with lightning, along with the fact that I I just tend to hike very fast and I like keep a fast pace. Otherwise I collapse at a certain point.
Got it. Flash of lightning, flash yeah. when you don't have any clothes on. That, exactly. That makes sense. Yeah. I thought maybe you were just running so fast to get into the water.
Oh, yeah. That would have been sense. That would have been more the family friendly version of Flash. But no. My friends are, as he likes to call himself, a degenerate. And so that was not the reasoning behind it.
Got it. Degenerate. Maybe I need to add that to the welcome. Welcome back to another week on the trail. Degenerates, dirtbags, and hiker trash.
That would actually, I think, be a great addition. I think a lot of people would appreciate it and connect to it.
That's a mouthful. That's a lot. Yeah. Okay. Now let's go back. I threw it in the intro there and we skipped right by it that, you know, mm-hmm. you are an intern for the John Freaking Muirpod. How did that all happen? What's going on?
Yeah. So I have been listening to the John Freaking Muirpod for probably about 6 months or so now. I found an episode March or February early this year, and I love backpacking. I've been backpacking solidly for about 3 years now, and I really fell in love with it and had been looking for new content that had to do with the outdoors, and I found this one and I really liked it. So as a result of that, I also am a big podcast person. I love listening to podcasts. I love working on podcasts. I go to UCLA and I am a part of the Daily Bruin, where I help work on the podcast that we have there. And so I was like, you know what? Like, what are the chances if during the middle of finals week, when I'm incredibly stressed out about school and I have a final in approximately 12 hours or so, I send an email to the host of the John Freaking Muirpod and see what happens. And you responded, which I was really surprised about. I didn't think that you were going to respond, and then you did. And from that, the ball got rolling, and now I'm an intern here. And I think that what I learned from that, it literally was, I sent the email the day before my final because I was so stressed. And my friend and I were studying in a library, and I was like, you know what? I need to do something for me and something that will make me happy in this moment. And I took a shot and it worked out. So that's sort of how it came about. It was very random. It was very last minute. And it's just sort of a, let's see how this goes, because I need something bright in my life besides the upcoming four finals that I had during that period of time.
Well, I am happy to be a ray of sunshine in your life. And just so you know, it was a one man operation over here. So when you send in complaints or intern applications, or, you know, you tag me in posts, I'm the guy that gets that. And I try to be responsive to the fans out there.
Yeah, that makes sense. You responded to me, I think, in less than 24 hours, which was amazing to me, because I was like, one, either they're not going to respond at all, or it's going to be a response in like a month and a half or 2 months or something. And I had no clue at the time either that you were the only person doing everything for the podcast. So that was something new to me when I learned that. And so I'm happy to help with it.
Thank you. So what was your sense? What kind of idea did you have in your head about, okay, what does this operation look like? How many people work at the John Freaking Muirpod before you heard from me?
I think in my head, because I work for podcasts outside of this one as well, I thought at least that you would have an editor was one thing I thought for sure. And then definitely you, the host, and maybe like one or two other people that were helping you find people or respond to things. I don't know, dealing with social media. I wasn't sure exactly how big it was, but I just had some expectation in my head, at least, that there would be at least three to four people working on it, because that's typically how, like, the smaller podcasts that I know, there's two to three people at least working on it, like two co-hosts or a person who's mostly hosting and then a person who helps edit everything. And that wasn't the case, which is very impressive, I think, for the podcast, that I didn't notice that. And I don't know how many people do notice that or know that, like, this very much was a one-man show for the entirety of its existence until approximately 3 months ago or 2 months ago.
Now the cat's out of the bag. So
yeah. And it's exciting. I think it's something very impressive and should be talked about more. Like, it's very cool that, because I don't remember even how I found this podcast. I think I either found it through Instagram or someone on the show or something like that had posted about it. So the fact that it is so popular and it has been just one person the entire time, I think, is a very impressive feat for podcasts.
Now, some of our listeners, regular listeners, may be saying, well, now, wait a second. I've heard reference to other people on this podcast as being part of the producers of the podcast. And, you know, Chopper and Jukebox are kind of irregular hosts from time to time. Once in a great while, they'll come on and help me out with an episode. And Half Calf, my youngest daughter, you know, mm-hmm. She signed on to be, you know, help me with the social media aspect of it. But you know, she's been working on getting her degree and teaching credential, and she is a newly minted fourth grade teacher. So, she's been underfoot, but not a whole lot of help with the podcast when she's doing all her stuff. So,
yeah, and I don't know if very many people also know what your actual job is outside of podcasting, because I didn't know that you had a job outside of doing this. So I'm not sure. Have you talked about that on an episode before?
I think I've mentioned a couple times. I work in education. I was a high school English teacher, then a high school administrator, an assistant principal, and a principal at a particular school up here in Santa Clarita for 20 plus years. And now I work at the district office. And actually, I just changed roles. So I've got a new job myself and taking on some new challenges. And the learning curve is steep, but it's a lot of fun. And this is kind of a release for me. It's a way for me to, like you said, it's my version of reaching out to somebody and saying, hey, right before finals, can I work on your operation here and do something fun? So this is my outlet.
Yeah, exactly. I feel the same. It's been really exciting so far. I've been editing episodes mainly, and then like looking at some of the other stuff that we've talked about, but it has been really fun. Like I love everything about podcasts. I love audio. I love listening to it. I love working on it. There's something just very exciting about, especially I think for hikers. I don't know about you, but like when I'm hiking by on my own and doing backpacking trips on my own, podcasts are my main form of entertainment. Like when you're doing 15 to 20 miles in a day, and I get so bored out of my mind by like mile six at the bare minimum, podcasts are the main form of entertainment that I use to fill the void of nothingness as we walk through the woods. So it's like so exciting to be able to have one specifically about the outdoors and then also be able to work on it now.
You've got a great voice, so I'm gonna say it right here and right now, you are working on some content for us, and when we get to that content, we get to some of those proposed episodes, you're gonna co-host one or more of those with me. That would be fantastic.
That would be very exciting. That is my secret goal of life, the dream that every kid has that like we never really talk about. Like sometimes it's I want to be an astronaut, sometimes I want to be a president. From like the age of 10 or 11, mine was very much I like want to be a radio host or podcast host. That was my far away dream that I never thought could happen. So the fact that it could on this amazing podcast is really exciting to me.
Now the fact that you as a 10-year-old were thinking about podcasting, that makes me feel really old, because when I was 10, podcasts were not a thing. They weren't going to come into existence for a few decades. So,
yeah. Well, I am 21. I'm freshly minted and allowed to drink now. So I had my first beer on the trail, actually, when I did Section J of the PCT, and I felt like such a mountain woman. I don't know why backpackers have such a big thing with beer, and I don't love beer. And so it was kind of exciting to like carry a 12 ounce can for like 30 miles for no reason and then drink it when you're exhausted and then immediately go to bed afterwards.
That could be your must bring piece of gear right there, carrying an extra beer on the trail.
Not mine. I don't love beer. My friends convinced me to do it, but definitely some other people that I've met in the wild, they love their beer, and they love their beer after a hard hike, like on top of a mountain. A beer is the one way that they feel completed, which is really funny.
It tastes better up there. It's an acquired taste.
It is. My friends and I went to a brewery for the first time the other day, and that was exciting. I've learned that I like beer that tastes like juice. That's my favorite.
Man, you turn 21, Angela, and you're drinking beer on the trail, and you're going to breweries. It's life's coming at you fast.
Exactly. It is. It definitely is, for sure.
Okay. So you have listened to the podcast before. Do you have a favorite episode?
I really like the episode that I actually listened to for the first time. I think their names are, it's a couple. I think one of the name is possibly Sentinel.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. I remember Sentinel. And what
I can't remember his wife's name.
Sentry, not Sentinel. Sentry.
Yeah, Sentry.
And Sentry was the male, and yeah. I'm drawing a blank on the other one, but they were a lot of fun to talk to.
Yeah, that's how I think I found the podcast. Now that I'm remembering it,
Isabel and Sentry.
Oh yeah, yeah. Because they're both climbers, and I'm actually a really big climber. And I grew up in California, so it was kind of exciting to hear like that sort of mixture. And I remember in the episode as well, Isabel was talking about how she started all of these outdoor things sort of later in life, and that was me. Like, I didn't start backpacking until 3 years ago. I didn't start climbing until a year ago, more or less, like a year and 2-3 months. And I've just gone really into the outdoor community in the last 2 to 3 years. So I really connected to them. And I think their story is so sweet, like pictures on Yosemite, on El Cap as they're getting married. Like, that's the dream. That's adorable and so sweet. I think that's great.
Now, Angela, what in your mind qualifies as later in life?
Oh, gosh.
I don't know. Didn't get into it until later in life 3 years ago when you're 18.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I think for me, later in life always consists of people who got into the outdoors as adults on their own. I think the learning gap is really big for people in the outdoors. That was like the biggest issue that I faced. It's really, really expensive. It's dangerous and it's scary and it's hard to take those first few steps into the outdoors, climbing, like backpacking, skiing, whatever you're doing outside. So whenever I say later in life, I always kind of imagine it as like the people who didn't have the outdoorsy parents. My parents love hiking and things like that, but like they are very worried for me whenever I go backpacking and on my climbing trips. They get the pictures of me on top, not the actual journey to get to the place that I got to, because I think they'd be a little too terrified of seeing that the in-between portions. So I think that's what it is. It's like that learning gap. For me, there was a huge learning gap when I was trying to get into everything, buying gear. My sister was really great and actually gifted me a lot of my gear. She would find things at Goodwill for like $10 or $5. And she would give those to me because she was like, I have my own backpacking gear. Like, I don't need this. You can take it. And like, I've slowly built up everything that I have over time over the last 3 years because it's really expensive. And like, I am that pusher. Like, I'm the person who says, you're going to take me backpacking with you. You're going to take me climbing with you. Like, you're going to lead me on my first trad route. You know, like I really had to push to get into where I'm at now. And that took a lot of time and a lot of effort. So I think that's sort of what I mean by later. Although I imagine later also means like 50 or 60 to some people.
All right. Hey, Lightning, you have listened to the podcast. So I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time explaining the pro tip inside of the week. You obviously know what that is. And there'll be a time for that towards the end of the episode. But let's talk about gear.
The must bring gear review.
All right. So thank you, Half Calf. Another feature we've been doing this season is the must bring gear review, sponsored by the ultralight backpacking gear company, Six Moon Designs. And Angela, here's how it works. If you were to let a stranger pack your bag with pretty much generic gear for a multi-day hike, what is the one specific piece of gear you would insist on being packed? And if you've got a particular brand for that specific piece of gear, even better. So yeah. Lightning, what's your must bring piece of gear?
Hiking poles for sure. Yeah, hiking poles, they save my knees. I have pretty bad knees and also ankles as well. And without my hiking poles, I don't think I could do half the things that I do. Like, not to the extent where I feel healthy enough to do the exact same thing the next day. So I know there are pros and cons and people have different opinions on hiking poles, but I love my hiking poles a lot, even if they are $5.
I find that a lot of people who are considering getting into hiking, they're not high on the trekking poles. They I think they're worried about what they're going to look like out there with hiking poles.
Which is so funny to me because I feel like they're so popular now. I think the majority of people I see hiking or backpacking tend to use them. And as a person who has very bad knees, when you're going downhill and it's like 3,000, 4,000 feet of elevation, like 4 or 5 miles or whatever it is, like I think they take a lot of the strain out of it. I don't know any of the scientific research. I am not a STEM person, even if I am a computer science major. I'm not a STEM person. But I bet there's some scientific research as to why trekking poles are useful and why they've been made in the world.
Okay. Now let's talk a little more about gear. You talked about all this equipment that you have gathered over the years. What tell us a little bit about your kit. What'd you take out there on section J, right? Section J?
Yeah. My friends and I did section J of the PCT just 2 days ago we finished. I am a big quilt advocate. I got one because it's the big ultralight thing to get a quilt, and it's honestly, it is the superior way. No offense to anyone who likes mummy bags. I do love the hood of the mummy bag, but quilts, they're so lightweight. And if you have a good sleeping pad, the big thing is you need a good sleeping pad. If you have like one of the Z lights, the foam ones, it's not going to work as well if you're like sleeping pretty cold, if it's 30 degrees, 25 degrees. But quilts are just so lightweight. Mine is from Enlightened Equipment. It was my like Christmas gift to myself during Black Friday when it was 40% off. So I'm a very big advocate for using used gear and then buying gear like that's cheap or on sale. Like sleeping bags and quilts are a little bit harder to find for sale or like for resale, but like your bear can, your pots, your can, like pots and things like that. My sleeping pad was from eBay. My backpack was from when I was like 11 or 12 that my mom got me. Most of my gear has been either gifted. Like my tent is a 30-year-old LL Bean single ultralight, whatever ultralight meant 30 years ago, that my sister found at Goodwill like 2 or 3 years ago. A lot of my gear has been picked up randomly over the years and for like very cheap prices because I'm a college student. Like when I splurge, it's like very specific and I've done a lot of research on what I want to do and like what I need and the specific brand. And if I can find it on Facebook Marketplace or on eBay, that's like where I tend to look. Or REI Garage Sale is another one that I frequent really often. I don't know if you've been here. Have you been to the REI Garage Sale in Manhattan Beach?
I have not, no.
Okay. So pro tip, I guess a little bit. In specific cities, there are REI Garage Sale stores that take all of the, like a typical REI garage sale, right? People return things that they didn't like, that they didn't want to use, whatever the reason is. REI has a great return policy. There is a store in Manhattan Beach specifically that collects all of the used gear from all of LA County and has it in this one specific store. So it's like the size of a normal REI store, but all of it is for sale. All of it is like 40 to 70% off, depending on how well the gear was taken care of or like how well used it is. And then one final
you said
thing.
Pro tip. You said pro tip, but this is like a trail name. You can't just declare trail name and say it. You can't just declare pro tip and say that's it. There's gonna be another one. You're still on the hook for that.
Okay, got it.
All right. So with your ultralight quilt and your LL Bean tent and your backpack that you got when you were 11, what was your base weight? Do you know for Section J?
I'm trying to think. We decided to use bear cans, which I regretted because bear cans are so ridiculously heavy. I don't love using them if I don't have to, but I would imagine it was in like the mid to high 20s, I would say. Maybe probably mid to low 20s at this point. I tend to go really ultralight. Like I bring the bare minimum. I don't have like an ultralight pack or anything like that, but I bring the bare minimum of what I need. It's just like for a 7-day trip, 2 pairs of underwear, a pair of pants, a pair of shorts, like one shirt, and then a pair of socks. And then for me personally, I like having a clean pair of socks that I can sleep in. So I like having like that one extra pair of socks that I know at the end of the day, if it's really cold, which we got some really cold days. We got like a day that was probably low 30s temperature at night. If I can have a clean pair of socks to put on at night, then I know I'll be happy and I know I'll sleep well.
Now, Angela, if you were truly ultralight, it would just be one pair of underpants.
I know. There are little joys on the trails, you know?
True. For some people, that's absolutely true.
I want at least one extra clean pair of underwear, just in case. You never know. Because there are days on the second to last day that we were there, it was pouring. Like, that's a lie. For me in California, it was pouring. For Washington, it was sprinkling. But it was so cold. And it rained for, I think, probably 6 hours that we were hiking or so. It was a pretty good amount of time. And like all the trail was washed out because there had been so much rain overnight. And sometimes you want a clean, dry pair of underwear.
It makes all the difference sometimes.
It does. It really does. It's the little things that make the difference on the trail.
Mm-hmm. So that's your luxury item. Second pair of underwear.
Yeah, exactly. A second pair of underwear, which some people, I think if they don't, my friends, actually, they brought 7 pairs of underwear, like a change every single day of the week, which is such a luxury that I haven't felt in years.
Well, I can tell you that Big E on the High Sierra Trail, he was proud in proclaiming that, he didn't have any underwear.
Oh, gosh.
That was a little TMI.
chafing. Is that?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But you know, on the trail, as you know, there is no such thing as TMI. We talk about anything and everything.
Yeah, my friend was joking with us. He was like, "You guys always talk about poop," and we were like, "There's no other place in the world where we can talk about poop as freely as we do on the trail." Like, how was the consistency this morning? Did you poop twice or did you poop once? How was the view? Was it good? Was it bad? Did you get a view? Did you see an animal also pooping? Those are all things that are so taboo in like normal culture. But for backpackers, it's like second nature. The first thing I do when I go on a backpacking trip is ask if people pooped that day or not.
Well, that was a 30-second clinic on poop conversation in the backcountry. That was pretty epic.
Thank you. I think I'm still sort of on the backcountry mind right now, just because I got out of the trail so recently. So poop is freely flowing right now.
Yeah, this is trail talk right here. This is true trail talk. Yeah, we talk about poop, about gear, and about what we're going to eat next.
Exactly. And if we filtered water or not, that's another common one.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. All right.
It's the hiking poll.
Have you listened to any of the recent episodes with the updated hiking poll?
I don't think I have.
Oh, this is going to be a real treat, Lightning. Okay. This is going to be great. I've changed it up. You would think that the hiking poll would be something about hiking. It's not. These are the big issues of the day that mm-hmm. people, our society, are wrestling with. And so these seven questions are going to help me determine how sane you are. I'm going to be able to give you a sanity score between 0, which is totally bonkers, and 100, which is totally sane.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if you are a hiking enthusiast and you are considering doing the PCT, it's an automatic 20-point deduction.
Okay. Well, right. I'm considering doing the PCT. So.
Okay. All right, there we go. Minus 20. Yeah. Now, this is totally subjective. It's whether or not I agree with your answer. A little bit of explanation after your answer is always helpful. Helps me, you know, kind of look into your mind and see how you're processing this and thinking about this. And that will help you with my score. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Now, we just finished some really good poop talk. So the first question is, appropriately, do you roll your toilet paper over or under? And this is not hiking related. This is just everyday life. So if I were to go check out your bathroom, is your toilet paper rolled over or under?
So neither, because I have a really bad habit of not putting the toilet paper back on the roll after it's like empty. My roommate gets really annoyed with me about it. I love you, Kaylee. I'm sorry. But like, I will just leave the toilet paper next to the toilet.
Okay. You know, I've asked that question probably, I don't know, 7-8 times now.
Mm-hmm.
And I have never gotten that answer. That's interesting.
That is my answer. I'm the bad roommate who leaves the toilet paper next to the toilet and not on the springy roll thing.
Okay. Second question. Cats or dogs?
Dogs. Definitely. I'm allergic to cats. I'm highly allergic to cats. So that is one thing. I do love them, but I think dogs, because I have a dog at home and I can't really touch cats.
Okay. That would be problematic, I guess.
A little bit. I'm actually living with two cats next year. So that'll be interesting. We'll see how that goes.
Now, what happens when you're around cats?
I go like almost into anaphylactic shock. It's like my throat will close up. My eyes get really itchy. Everything just gets really, really itchy and puffy. I like have to take a cold shower. It's definitely the dander. Like when I pet cats and then I touch my face, everything just swells. So the rule that we've created is Angela's not allowed to touch the cats.
Okay. Now a scratchy voice and your eyes swollen shut, that makes it tough to podcast.
It does, but there's this beautiful thing called Claritin. It's my favorite drug. So.
Nice. Great. What kind of dog do you have?
I have a Maltese. He's actually surprisingly does very well on the trail. His name is Charlie. He's approximately 15 to 20 pounds, depending on how much my dad feeds him that day. So he's like a little white thing, but he comes out on the trail with us pretty often with my sister, her boyfriend, and I. Whenever we go backpacking together, he will come with us. And his favorite thing to do is he'll run in the sun and then walk very slowly through the shade if it's really hot outside. So he's figured it out finally. That's how he slows us down, is by running through the hot spots and then walking through the cold ones.
Smart dog. That's my policy on the trail too.
Oh, really? It's really cute. It's one of my favorite things to watch him do. I think it's really silly. And we never take him on anything super big. Like, the most we've ever done with him, I think, is maybe 10 miles split over 2 days or so. So just 5 miles a day, five mm-hmm. to 7 miles a day. But he likes it. And he always sleeps in between my sister and her boyfriend in their tent, which is really cute too.
Okay. Question number three, Netflix or YouTube?
Netflix. Well, neither. But Netflix over YouTube.
Okay, explain that.
I don't know what it was, but I stopped watching TV approximately 2 years ago, and I just haven't gone back into it for some reason. I deleted the YouTube app, I think, maybe a year and a half ago, and haven't really found a reason to re-download it. And then I think I get bored is the big thing. I get bored very, very easily. And so watching a full Netflix TV show takes a lot of energy for me, and I can't do it anymore.
So what I'm hearing you say, Lightning, is that you gave up TV later in life.
Yes, I did. Yes. I did. Okay. Later in life, at the ripe young age of 20. Gave up TV.
All right. This next question, particularly important in your score. Question four, what is your most useful skill in the case of a zombie apocalypse?
I yell really loudly. So if I yell really loudly, they know I need help. That's about it. Or, you know, if I yell really loudly, the zombies will eat me. I think I'm the first to die in a zombie apocalypse is what I'm trying to say. I don't think I would survive very long.
Not a whole lot of useful skills. I was going to say, being loud, I mean, that would attract them to you, I would think.
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe if it's ear piercing enough, they'll run away. It'll explode their ears.
Make their heads explode.
Yeah, like in Plants vs. Zombies, that's the goal, I think. That's the only form of zombies I understand, is Plants vs. Zombies.
Yeah, I gave up Plants vs. Zombies later in life.
When you were...
I don't want to say.
Yeah, right. I gave up later in life too, when I was 8.
You're going to have two choices of the next question.
Okay.
So I have two versions of this question. And you tell me if the first one applies to you, or if maybe the second one is a better application to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so first version of the question is, okay, Star Wars or Star Trek? The second version of the question is Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings?
Okay.
Which one do you have more vested interest in?
Definitely the second question.
Okay, so let's go with that. Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings?
Definitely Harry Potter. That like was my entire childhood. I have very specific moments of days where I would not go hang out with my friends, instead read the fifth book of Harry Potter in my bedroom. So I was a big Potter fan. And then I went to Universal Studios when I was, I think, 17 or 18, and got to drink butter beer and go on Hagrid's ride. And it was one of the best days of my life. It was so much fun. And the movies portrayed the book so well. So definitely Harry Potter.
Okay, that's gonna be a follow-up question. Did the movies do the books justice?
I think so. I think of all of the book to movie adaptations, they did Harry Potter very, very well in comparison to other book to movie adaptation. Mm-hmm. I do like Lord of the Rings, though. I watched them. My roommates were really upset with me because I hadn't watched them yet. So they forced me to watch all three of them. And they were great. They were really good movies.
And did you read the books, Lord of the Rings?
I tried to read The Hobbit, and then I got bored. So no. The answer is no. I heard it's a lot of walking. They just walk a lot.
It's right up your alley. I mean, that's what you like to do.
That is true. I do walk a lot, very often. So maybe I would enjoy reading it. I'll try it. I'll add it to my never-ending list of books that I need to read.
Okay. Follow-up question. This doesn't count in the survey, but just fun facts. Harry, Ron, or Hermione?
Definitely Hermione. You got to stick with the girls. And she was such a boss the entire time.
She was a boss. Yep.
She knew what was going on. She was like, "You're being dumb. Don't do that." That's what I say to my friends a lot of times. I'm like, "You're being dumb. Don't do that." And I try to mimic my Hermione like energy into the world.
Okay. Question number six. We're almost there. Question number six. Best fry shape: skinny, thick, or waffle?
I'm a waffle person. Yeah. I think skinny, there's just not enough potato for me. It's too crispy. Thick, there's too much potato for me, and I don't like the mushy. And so waffle has that perfect consistency of crispy exterior and some mushy interior, or just nice potato texture interior.
Yeah, waffle is just about the same size as thick, right? But you have the holes in it, so it's not too much potato.
Yeah, it's not too much potato, which I feel like thick fries can just, they overdo the potato sometimes. And I don't want too much. I eat so many mashed potatoes on the trail. I need a very fine line of potato in my life.
Okay. Question number 7. Are introverts too quiet or are extroverts too loud?
I have a whole philosophy behind this question, actually. I don't think this is what the podcast to get into it for, but I think neither. Neither is like the answer.
There's a nice symmetry to that answer, right? That was the answer to your first question and your last question. Explain.
Yeah, because it's, my friends and I talk about this a lot. Like, I think in our modern world, this is some Angela philosophy right here, but in our modern world, like, extroverts are really looked upon as like superior. Like, people want to be extroverted. People want to talk a lot and be the life of the party and all that sort of stuff. But there's a really strong power in being an introverted person and being the person that listens and is capable of being there as a presence beyond being the presence who always is talking. So I think it's neither in my head. Both hold really important roles in society and in conversations and like social interactions where introvert versus extrovert is used as a word. So I would say neither. Both are perfect in their own wonderful way.
Okay. Now, I know you're not STEM, but I've got a certain formula I have to go through to adjust the totals here. So let me just do some quick math for us. Mm-hmm. So I got to carry the 2. We're going to divide by pi, multiply by the root of 5. And we're going to adjust for the atmospheric pressure at the top of Mount Whitney. That'd be 14,505 feet. And I've come out with a score of 64.
Okay.
64. What do you think of that score?
That feels very neutral to me. Like, not too low, not too high, just like right there in the middle, but a little bit above the middle.
If I had asked your sister, what score would you give Angela on a scale from 1 to 100 on how sane she is, where would she have landed?
Probably very low. I'm slightly insane. I don't tend to slow down and people I'm crazy for it. So
okay. Probably. I think the scores are coming out too high. I'm gonna have to adjust my formula. Maybe to knock that down a little bit. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, hey, before we get too far down the trail, let's back up a little bit. We'd love to hear about your background, where you grew up. Sounds like you have one sister. Do you have more than one sister?
Just one sister.
Just one sister. And what kinds of sports and hobbies you played growing up? And how did you get involved in this whole outdoor adventure cult later in life?
Yes. Later in life aspect.
That might be, you know what? I'm always on the hunt during the episode for a great episode title. This has come up a number of times now, and it really just, it strikes my funny bone. This might be later in life with lightning.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, later in life with lightning or with Lupin. They both work. I do prefer the name Lupin. I will say that. Lightning is most recently.
You know what? We're going to have to stop recording. We're going to have to go back to the top and re-record all this. So it's just Lupin instead of lightning. I've created a monster here. Okay.
I know you have. It's the whole entire trail name philosophy. I don't know. It's a whole thing. But I grew up in Monterey Bay, California. So I grew up by the ocean right next to Big Sur. If people have heard about that at all, it's a really, really beautiful place with amazing, absolutely amazing hiking. It's my favorite place in the world for sure. Like, I have a necklace of California with a heart over the Monterey Bay, Big Sur area because it means so much to me. And I didn't like hiking when I was growing up. I was that rebel child who was like, if my mom tells me I have to like hiking, I'm not going to like hiking, because my mom was a part of a Saturday Chinese hiking group, actually, in Monterey Bay, because Monterey Bay is not a super diverse place. It's mostly white. And so my mom found a Chinese community through her hiking group, and she would invite me to come, and we would go hiking in Point Lobos, which is a really popular hiking spot, or in Big Sur, or Garapata, which is also in Big Sur, Carmel Valley. These are all like local Monterey spots, Toro Park. We would go to all the, or Santa Cruz, we would go hiking in these places. And at a certain age, I just was like, I don't want to listen to you anymore. So I'm not going to go hiking. And so I stopped, and I thought in my head, like, oh, I didn't like hiking as a result of that. And then I went to a summer camp when I was 12, and that was the first ever backpacking trip I ever did. And I really liked it, and it was super fun. But it was one of those things where if you don't have parents or older family members who or friends who can bring you out backpacking at such a young age, you never really go again, because it's pretty, my mom is still worried about me as a 21-year-old going backpacking in the woods alone, like nonetheless if I was 11 or 12. So I didn't go backpacking again until I was 19 or so, I think, 19 or 20. It was the COVID year, and what else could we do besides go outside? You know, everything was closed. The only things we could do was go out in nature. And so my sister who had gotten to backpacking more recently, and she really liked it. She had a lot of gear. The only thing I had at the time was like my backpack that I had gotten when I was 11. She was like, oh, let's go do this backpacking trip in Big Sur and my roommates can come down. And this was like the thick of COVID. This was like September of, or maybe July of 2022, something like that. So we were still pretty thick in the quarantine of everything. And we called it the Cone Peak Loop of Death. It's beautiful if anyone ever wants to do it. It's an amazing trail in Big Sur, and you get to see like the most amazing ocean views that Big Sur has to offer. But it's also like 6,000 feet of elevation gain in a very, very short period of time. You go up and down multiple passes. And then the other really big thing is where I'm from, there is so much poison oak. And poison oak, if you get it on your body, you never want to get it on your body ever again. It is terrible. It is itchy. It feels awful. And so
I can confirm that.
Yeah, the trail was just covered. It was covered in poison oak the entire time. I think the entire like 13 miles that we did over 2 days, 13, 14 miles we did in 2 days, was completely covered in poison oak. And so we called it the Cone Peak Loop of Death. But for some reason, the suffering was fun, and I decided to continue on. And from there, the ball just sort of got rolling of, I really liked it and I wanted to do more. So I went on a backpacking trip with my friends in Yosemite a little bit later. And that was really cool because, you know, we were reaching that age of adulthood where we were the ones organizing the backpacking trip. It wasn't other adults like deciding, oh, this is the food you need to bring. This is where we're going to camp. This is what we're going to do. It was just me and two of my high school best friends being like, we're going to go to Yosemite and we're going to drive to Yosemite ourselves. And then we're going to go to Young Lakes, which is in Tuolumne Meadows. And it's an amazing backpacking place as well. And so that was really exciting. And from there, I just got into it. I was like, yeah, I like this. I'm going to keep on doing it and doing it and doing it. And now here I am, like having attempted a through hike and having done Section J, which was really exciting for me because I'm planning to do the PCT next year. Like I'm applying for permits in November and I'm graduating college early to attempt doing it. But that's sort of how I got into the outdoor cult. It happened miraculously. And honestly, I think my sister played a really large influence in it.
Okay, very good. Now, hey, before we go to break here, real quickly, you mentioned that you're in school. You're at UCLA. You'll be starting your senior year next year?
Yeah, I'll be starting my senior year. It's my final year of college.
And did you tell us what you were majoring in?
Yeah, I briefly mentioned it. I'm a computer science major. So right. I'm in STEM. I don't love it, but I'm in it and I do it.
What are you going to do with your computer programming background, your degree?
Yeah, that's what I mull on whenever I'm backpacking. It's the biggest question of my life currently. What am I going to do after graduation? And it's a little bit stressful, but I'm excited to figure it out a little bit. And hopefully the PCT will help clarify some things in that realm of my life.
Okay. I want you to take that stress. I want you to put it in a little box, close the lid, and we're going to put that box to the side for right now. We won't revisit that topic the rest of the interview.
Cool. Sounds good.
All right. Hey, stay tuned. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into some of Lupin's other hobbies, and we're going to hear about that Section J hike of the PCT. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
From the backcountry to the backyard, we believe everyone deserves the highest level of protection. Since 1984, Sawyer Products offers the best, most technologically advanced solutions for protection against sun, bugs, and water. Using time-released liposome technology, topical insect repellents, and new standards in water filtration. And with every Sawyer product you buy, you are helping to provide clean water through 140 charities in 80 countries with their long-lasting water filters. Every Sawyer product you buy is an investment in our common humanity. Choose Sawyer and keep the adventure going, knowing that their products have been tested and chosen by those who count on serious protection on the trail all day long. Six Moon Designs has been innovating ultralight backpacking gear for the past 20 years. With a wide range of products ranging from ultralight shelters to backpacks and accessories like their extensive line of trekking umbrellas, Six Moon Designs is sure to have a great piece of gear for your needs. With the company philosophy being that gear should aid one's experience, not define it, Six Moon Designs thinks the more time people spend outside the natural world, the better off this world will be. And remember, go wild, live young.
Welcome back. We are talking to Lupin, aka Angela Hu, the intern for the John Freaky Mirror Pod, about her trips and travels. And so, you know, just looking over our discussion points, I just want to point out that there are a lot of very cool activities listed here. I mean, I see surfing, I see bouldering, I see rope climbing, I see backcountry skiing. What's going on? You cover it all.
Yeah, I love adventure. And I get bored really easily. So the moment someone says, let's go do something fun outside, I say, bet, when are we going to do it? Even if I've never done it before. So I started surfing because my best friend from high school surfs and I lived with her in Santa Barbara. So I learned how to surf about 3 years ago and I surf pretty consistently in LA. I try to go at least two or three times a week at beginner beaches where people are nice to me. Backcountry skiing, one of my roommates from UCLA, her family was doing a backcountry ski trip from in Yosemite from Badger Point to, or the Badger ski area to Glacier Point. It's a 21-mile round trip backcountry ski. And I had never backcountry skied before, but we did that and it was so much fun and beautiful. If you're a skier, highly suggest that. That's a once in a lifetime opportunity. And you will see Yosemite in a way that so few people get to see it, because you can only reach Glacier Point during the winter through backcountry skiing or snowshoeing. There's no other way to get there. And then rock climbing. Yeah. Rock climbing is my new thing. After I complete the PCT next year, my big thing is rock climbing right now. I usually try to go climbing at least out climbing outside once a week. Usually on the weekends, I'll do trips to Bishop or Joshua Tree or Red Rock in Vegas. And I'm a really, really big boulderer because people at UCLA really love bouldering, but I love ropes more. I really want to get into trad, which is a specific type of climbing. And I've been able to convince some of my friends to take me out on some trips with them. So yeah, rock climbing is my new love outside of hiking and backpacking.
Okay, and with trad climbing, is a portal edge on the side of El Capitan, is that in your future?
Yes, that is the goal. That is my big climbing goal. Yeah, is that. Nice. After I reach that, we'll find a new goal, just like with the PCT. After the PCT, we'll find something new. But right now, that's the goal for me.
Incredible. Have you watched the rock climbing documentaries that are out there that are just so fascinating and terrifying and entertaining?
Yeah,
Valley Uprising, there's Free Solo, there's the Dawn Wall, and Wide Boys. Have you ever seen Wide Boys?
I haven't seen Wide Boys before. I've never actually heard of that before.
Yeah, WIDE, wide, as in opposite of thin, wide. Mm-hmm. And Boys, I think, has a Z on the end of it instead of an S. And it's about these guys who climb the off-width cracks. It's not your traditional, thin crack you're jamming your fingers in. These are wide cracks where they got to jam an arm into, or a leg, a thigh, shoulder, something to get purchase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't seen that before, but I will. I actually really like off-width climbing, so that sounds really interesting to me.
Yeah, check it out. It's pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah, I have to write that down, or I'll ask you for it again at the end of the episode.
Yep. Now, tell us about your Tahoe Rim Trail experience, because I understand that was a pretty important and impactful trip for you.
Yeah. So last summer, I decided to live in my Subaru Outback named Rosie, basically, and
Go Subi life.
go Subie life. It's the superior car. I'm just gonna say it. Subaru Outback's better than the Crosstrek and the Forester. The length is great for people
Agreed.
to
Do
sit.
you have the badge of ownership? Have you discovered that?
No, I. What is that?
So Subaru badge of ownership. Look it up. It's going to ask you
Okay.
for your to provide your vehicle ID number, your VIN. And once you
Okay.
do that, and the purchase date and your VIN, you can pick. It's a series of icons that go on the back of your Outback that show what you use your Outback for. It starts off with which Subaru is this for you? And so on mine, I've got first, one ST. There's a little circular button, and then off of that circular button is a series of badges that show what I have used my Outback for. So I've got the a 26.2 on there. I've got a campsite, a little, badge for camping, a badge for hiking, and a badge. I'm drawing a blank right now because I'm on the spot, but a badge for something else. But it's really cool and it's all completely free. So badge of ownership by Subaru. It's just, how many Subarus is this for you? And what kinds of things do you do in your Subaru? Very cool.
I think I've seen that on people's cars before, and I've always wondered what that is. So thank you. That is so helpful, actually, because
Check
I've
it
always
out.
wondered. Yeah, I've always wondered what that was. That's good to know. Yeah, so I love Subarus. They're great cars, and Rosie has done me well. I got her last year specifically for my travels, and we have gone over 30,000 miles in the last, more than that, maybe 40,000 miles in the last year now. But I basically decided to do solo backpacking, which was like one of the most amazing and one of the scariest things I've ever done. Like being in the woods alone, I think as a woman as well, is really scary sometimes. Like the people obviously are very nice in the backcountry, but like you never know exactly what's going to happen. I also acknowledge that black bears are very nice and they will not harm you, but it's still scary when you hear them shuffling outside of your tent. Actually, my bear can, which my computer is resting on right now, has scratches from a bear that it was named Wiley from the Trinity Alps area in California. So bears are like, were always a little bit scary to me. But I really wanted to do it because I wanted to prove to myself that I could backpack alone. I didn't want to have to rely on a person, another person to go on a trip with me. Like I just wanted to be able to go off on my own for as long as I wanted, whenever I wanted. So Tahoe was kind of my big culmination of the summer of backpacking alone. It was like ta the Tahoe Rim Trail is a thru hike. If people haven't heard of it before, it goes around the entire rim of Lake Tahoe, California. It is amazing and it's beautiful. It's approximately 170 miles, and I was planning to do it in 9 days or so. So I was like averaging, hoping 15 to 20 miles a day, and was going to resupply in Tahoe City after day five. And it was amazing because I proved to myself that I can do so much, but it was also one of the hardest things I've ever done because you've never felt like a, well, I never had felt more like a failure until I was crying in my tent at 10 p.m. looking up on Google, when should I quit a through hike? Because I had hiked 18 miles that day, had seen smoke from the Dixie Fire coming over Tahoe from the other side of the trail, didn't have any clean water because there was a toxic algae bloom in the lake that I was sleeping next to, had heard bears like nearby me or had heard some sounds from some animals at some point, and then didn't eat dinner because I didn't have enough water basically to cook dinner. And it was really hard. I
But
cried.
other than that, the hike was going great.
The hike was going great in every other way. It was beautiful. It was amazing. The views were great. It is an amazing trail. It's also a great first trail, I would say, like first through hike for people because it's a little bit shorter. 170 miles isn't insane. It's also a loop, so it's super easy. I parked my car in Nevada, I think. And if you're solo through hiking, it's so easy to get back to your car because it is a loop in that way. But yeah, that was the second day of the through hike. And I had hiked the most miles I had ever done in my entire life, like 18 miles. And I was exhausted and I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what to do. I was actively, because Tahoe is at such high elevation and because the city is so well populated, I had service basically the entire trail. That's another reason why it's great for people's first through hikes, you have service for almost the entire 170 miles, which is like unheard of for through hikes, basically. But I was actively looking up and reading blogs about when a person should quit a through hike because I was exhausted. I was lonely, you know, like when you're hiking 13, 14 hours on your own, you get really lonely. You miss talking to your friends and your family and the people that you love, and they're not going to call you for the entire 10 hours that you're hiking on your own. So the next day, actually, I decided to hike out, and I hitchhiked for the first time, and a really, really sweet couple in Tahoe, they picked me up and dropped me off at my car. I hiked in air quality that was like, I think 180. The Dixie Fire started picking up really bad. So it wasn't even for me, like it was a personal decision, but it also wasn't because the air quality was so bad. I was like, I can't breathe through the next 7 days like this. That's not healthy for me. And it was a really good decision for me to hike out in the end because Tahoe basically went on lockdown after that. Like the Dixie Fire picked up so quickly that people had to evacuate Tahoe, and the AQI I think got to around 400 at a certain point. So it was good that I hiked out, but you know, I had been planning that trip for 2 months at that point. Like that was going to be the big thing that I did that summer. And so having to make that decision to bail out was a really hard one, but it taught me a lot about myself, which was I'm capable of anything, which is amazing. And I'm capable of doing it on my own, which is something that's really important to me, that independence factor of it. But I also know myself and know my limits and know when I need to call it quits for my own health and for my own safety, which is something that I'm not very good at. I like to push and I like to go hard, and I want to go as far and as quickly as I can. But there are certain points in my life sometimes where I need to slow down and remember that my physical health and my mental health is also really important in that equation and in the search of adventure. So Tahoe was
so many takeaways from that one trip. I mean, you just rattled off there, you know, 6-7 things that made such a difference and you learned from. That's fantastic.
Yeah, Tahoe, I think that there's something about failure. Failure teaches you a lot about yourself. And even though I don't think I necessarily failed Tahoe, like bailing out doesn't need to be considered a failure, I don't think, in through hiking, even though it often is considered that. It taught me a lot about myself in that way. And I've done a lot of reflecting on it because it was like a really sad moment for me when I decided to leave the trail.
Yeah, failure, you need failure in your life. Otherwise, you don't learn. I mean, if everything was roses all the time and you didn't face any adversity ever, and everything you did was perfect the first time, there wouldn't be any takeaways from that. I mean, wisdom comes from mistakes, so you wouldn't be a very wise person.
Exactly. And I got to fail really, really hard in Tahoe. I got all the failures in one day.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It was like literally all the backpacking failures that I could have in one day. Because one of my other rules when I hike alone, when I'm backpacking alone, is I always sleep before the sun goes down, because otherwise I can't sleep at night if I sleep after the sun goes down. And the sun was setting as I was trying to cook dinner, which is why I just didn't end up eating dinner, because I was like, I'm not going to be able to fall asleep if I don't go to bed right now.
I have a theory that hiking and backpacking, through hiking especially, is for people with compulsive personalities. Do you think that applies?
Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that applying to me and to very many of the other people that I know who enjoy through hiking.
Yeah, my wife has called me a serial hobbyist before. You know, you kind of get fascinated with something, you go down that rabbit hole and you explore to its, you know, as much as you can, and then you get drawn to something else and something else and something else.
Yeah, that is really hitting on my personality right now, because that's like basically what my outdoor adventurous life has been. It's gone from backpacking to climbing, and I've been going down the rabbit holes as deeply as I can until I reach the goals that I've set out for myself, basically.
Well, it sounds like you're a good fit for the John Freaking Muir Pod, because everybody who works here is like that. So
yes, everyone who works here is like that.
All right. Hey, tell us how this contrasts with your most recent trip of Section J of the PCT. First of all, define Section J for us. Where is that? How long is it?
Yeah, Section J is in Washington State. It's, I think, the third to last section of the PCT, and it's from the Washington Trail Association. It's like the most undisturbed trail on the PCT or something like that, because there's really no way to access Section J except for the endpoints. Like the hikes out are pretty intense. They're all like 6-ish miles, I think, or like it's basically a section of the trail that's pretty isolated. But it goes from Snoqualmie Valley to Stevens Pass. So Snoqualmie Pass to Stevens Pass in Washington. If people know Washington well, it's I think Highway 90, and it goes to Leavenworth basically. So you're looping around two sections of the highway. You're going between two sections of the highway. And it is a beautiful part of the PCT. You get like views of Mount Rainier for about half of the trail, which is amazing. And then for the other entirety of it, you get these like amazing alpine lakes that are so fun to swim in, skinny dip if you prefer, which is always my preference. And it's a great one, but it's really hard. I think it's around 16,000 feet of elevation gain throughout the entire trail. It's again 70 miles, which is like a pretty good amount. And yeah, that's like the basics of what Section J is, I think.
Got it. Now, I was in Seattle and Vancouver a couple of weeks ago, and while we were in Seattle, we went to Snoqualmie Falls. How close was I to Section J?
I think you're really close. Driving-wise, I think you're really close. I'm not sure exactly how close it is, but I would say people in Washington will get angry at me, so I won't say the exact distance, but I think the answer is close.
Okay, so for all my older listeners out there who are of an age like me, if you watched Twin Peaks growing up, the TV series with Kyle MacLachlan, Snoqualmie Falls is in the opening scenes of every episode of Twin Peaks. So the opening credits, it is the waterfalls coming down, and you have the lodge right above the waterfall. That's Snoqualmie Lodge. I think it's Snoqualmie Lodge. Don't quote me on that, but it's definitely Snoqualmie Falls. And I just got this eerie feeling of like being in the TV show when I was there. It's kind of haunting, actually.
Well, I've heard of Twin Peaks, so I feel like that should get me brownie points to a certain extent, even if I'm not at your age.
All right. So you're 65 now, not 64. There you go. An extra point.
There we go.
All right. And Mount Rainier is spectacular. I mean, from Seattle, it just kind of looms in the background. I know that in Southern California, or just north of Southern California, with Mount Whitney is the tallest mountain in the lower 48 at 14,505. Yeah. Mount Rainier is not as high as that, but Mount Rainier has the more typical mountain shape to it. Mount Whitney, you're looking at it, you're like, okay, that's a mountain. It's just kind of a hump, right? It doesn't
it's really not hard to find when you're driving.
It's hard to find.
You have to either know it, or you like look at a picture to be like, oh, that's Whitney in the range, because it's actually, because of how far the highway is from Whitney, it's smaller than the peaks around it. I was actually in Rainier today. I was at Rainier National Park looking at it, and that mountain is a beast. Like that, it is beautiful and it's magnificent, but it's ginormous. It's huge.
Yeah, you don't have to look too hard for Rainier. It's like right there. It jumps out at you. No, missing it.
You see it when you're in Seattle. You see it immediately.
Yeah. What were the highlights from Section J?
Everything about it was so fun. It was like, I definitely loved hiking it with friends. I was with four other people while I was doing it, and that was really enjoyable. There's something just great about getting to camp together at the end of the night, like talking about how the day went, cooking dinner, eating everyone's food. Everyone tries everyone's food, which was really, really fun. So I think that having, unlike my Tahoe through hike, having other people with me made it really, really enjoyable. I think also it made it really hard, but the diversity in what we were doing, we were going over a lot of different passes every single day, at least one pass a day, maybe even two sometimes, but the weather was just so different for us. So like the first day it was 95 degrees outside, ridiculously hot. One of their people actually got heat stroke kind of during the middle, and he had to hike out, and then he hiked back in a few days later. And then the very last day was like 50 degrees outside, and it was like super rainy and wet and cold, but it kind of was exciting in that way because we got that diversity of like the typical Pacific Northwest wet, rainy weather, as well as like the really, really hot, which is less common. But it's just beautiful. It's a beautiful section of the PCT, and you are hiking next to these amazing alpine lakes. And one of the things that I loved about being able to do it as a section hike is we could swim in all those lakes. You know, like when you're doing a through hike, you're packing in those miles. A friend who joined us at the end of Section J, who's actively doing the PCT right now, but just taking a quick break in Seattle, he finished Section J in 2 days. So he did 35 and 35 miles. And my friends and I decided to do it in 7 days, and we did 10 miles a day. So it really gave us the opportunity to enjoy the nature that we were in and to really look at it and appreciate it. Sadly, there's a lot of natural berries in Washington State. So there's a lot of like blackberries and blueberries and strawberries that are growing along the trail. Sadly, none of those were growing yet. They weren't in full bloom, but to see those on the side of the trail was really exciting. And then the other thing, we're going back to the poop talk, the real trail talk. So in Section J, there are three toilets. like sittable toilets on the section at different lakes. The lakes are Mig Lake, Wapus Lake, and then also Glacier Lake. And that was definitely a highlight as well. Being able to sit down was exciting. It was a little change of scenery.
Great views from the throne?
Not terrible views. You got views of the lake sometimes, but it just kind of felt, I've never actually sat on a toilet, like a outdoor toilet like that before, so it felt kind of exciting to try that for the first time.
Now, was the toilet just on a platform with no walls, or were there any walls involved?
There were no walls at any of the three. They were just like little like wooden cubes, and they had a little wooden plank on top, and then you just lift the plank up. And then I rated them. Wapus was the worst, Glacier was second, and then Mig was the first.
Now, what are the criteria that goes into the rating?
How well it smells. If it's smelly, then it goes down to the bottom, because I mean, it's like, that's gross. I don't want to smell other people's poop, even if I like talking about it. How well the door hinges is another thing. So Glacier Lake, it was just like tied on by a wire, but at Mig Lake, there was actually a metal rod, so you could lift it and it would like kind of stay lifted when you sat down. Those were like the criteria, and then the general atmosphere of how it felt. Glacier Lake, I think I like gave it a lower rating because I was freezing. I was so cold because that was the day that it rained. But sorry, a lot of poop talk. I'm just used to it at this point.
Fantastic. All right. So when I have on here, what's next for Angela? Mm-hmm. And it says PCT 2023.
Yes.
Are we speaking that into existence right here on the podcast tonight?
We are there. It is going to happen.
It's going to happen. Nice.
It's going to happen. Yeah. I actually am graduating college early, which I mentioned before. So I'm graduating a quarter early from UCLA to attempt to do the PCT. I'm going to apply for permits in November, excuse me. And Section J really just made me realize how much I want to do it. Like, that is one of my life goals, and it's a goal that I've been thinking about for 2 years now. So I'm trying to balance right now, though, because there's an internal debate going on in my head, which is, this is my final year in college and I lost a lot of college to COVID. So I'm almost tempted to a certain extent to stay for my final quarter, even though I'm not taking classes, and possibly southbound hike it instead of northbound hike it. Because there were a lot of people who were starting the trail in July. They were at Section J when we were doing Section J, who were southbound hikers, so going from Canada to Mexico versus the typical Mexico to Canada. So that like is a consideration in my mind, but there's a lot of things that go into those sort of decisions in the end.
Okay. And here's a question for you. I told you I wasn't going to ask you any questions you didn't know the answers to, but I may have lied. So okay. What does it take to be a thru hiker?
Everyone can be a thru hiker. It just takes the will to do it. That's it. Like, if you want to do it, you can do it. Every single person is capable of doing a thru hike. And I would even dare to say, everyone is capable of doing it by getting off the couch right now and just doing it. You just would have to start a lot slower. So in comparison to people who are training, who might start their days off with like 15 to 20 miles or 10 to 20 miles a day, you could do it 2 to 3 miles a day or 4 miles a day, you know, like incrementally. And if you have support, that's doable for you. But it just, I think it really does take the will. Everyone's physically capable of it. And also you probably have to like pooping and sleeping in the outdoors. I know that's a big reason why people don't like backpacking. So probably not minding those would be helpful as well.
And maybe to help some folks out there who are considering, who have never done this before, I mean, how worried were you about the whole pooping in the outdoors issue prior to actually doing it?
Well, I've talked about poop so much on this episode, my goodness. I never mind it. I prefer pooping in the wild.
Yes, but before you ever did it, did you worry about it? Did you say, this is going to be an obstacle for me? This is going to be a problem? Or you're like, yeah, this is just how it goes.
Yeah, I just, in my head, I was like, this is just how it goes. Like, I never minded it even before I started backpacking. Yeah.
All right. Hey, Lupin, you know where we are?
No.
Where no? Are we?
Pro tip?
The pro tip insight of the week.
That's right. It's time for the pro tip insight of the week. That time of the episode where you get to share some trail wisdom with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience even better. So Lupin, what do you have for us?
I would say the biggest thing is just go out there and do it. For people in the outdoors who love the outdoors, oftentimes they love bringing other people into the outdoor cult. And so if you're nervous or afraid, like I was when I first started backpacking, ask your friends for advice, ask your friends to bring you on the trips that you've gone on or that they're going on. And, you know, it just takes a little bit of willpower and some force sometimes, and a little bit of luck, even if you can find those really great mentors, but it'll happen like slowly but surely. And then the other big thing, just as a person, like, I think we all love the outdoors and we really care about it. And like the production of things is a really big issue nowadays, and climate change and things like that. Find used gears. There are so many places that sell used gear, and they're a lot of great, and it's a lot cheaper. It's better for your wallet. Like if you're a college student like me who has a part-time job and makes like not that much money, it's really great to find those sort of resources. So those are the two things, pro tips that I would have.
Well said. So there you have it. That's it. This episode is just about in the books. Hope our listeners enjoyed our time with Lupin. Want to thank her for joining us this week. Lupin, how can our listeners keep up with you on social media, and where can they find updates on your latest adventures?
They can't.
They sadly can't.
I don't have an Instagram, but I'll be working on the podcast so you can hear me on this, on the John Frickin' Muir Pod.
Very good. All right. Remember to check out the pod on social media. We are on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And if you have comments or clips you want to share, you can send it to me at johnfreakymuir@gmail.com.
The Adventure Media Recommendation.
Lupin, I'm also looking to you to share a recommendation for a book, a movie, documentary, website, something that's going to help keep our listeners connected to outdoor adventure. We call this our Adventure Media Recommendation. What do you have for us?
I don't have any at the current moment.
No, you get no book or movie you've seen that really is inspirational about the outdoors?
Not in particular that I feel like other people don't really know about or heard. Like obviously Free Solo is an amazing climbing film that I love because I love climbing. There is one, but I'm forgetting the name of it. I can't grasp the name right now. So I'm having difficulty pulling it out of my mouth.
Oh, maybe we can help here. What's it about?
Well, there is this really amazing woman who I'm hoping to have on the podcast soon, who is doing the PCT currently, and she runs this really amazing organization to bring like Black backpackers out in Colorado. So she's a really, really cool person, and she is the PCT correspondent for the Trek this year. Okay. I think, or backcountry something, I forgot the exact magazine, but she's the PCT correspondent. So I've read through some of her posts and I've really loved all the things that she's written so far.
Okay, well, we'll stay tuned for that. Maybe we'll have a future episode with her on it.
Yeah, hopefully.
What have we not asked you?
That, again, that's half calf. She was born in Southern California. She was raised in Southern California. She likes to think that she's from somewhere else, and she tries different accents. I'm not sure she nailed that one exactly. But before we wrap things up, just one more segment for you called "What Have I Not Asked You That You're Dying to Tell Us About?"
Ugh, I think we've covered everything. I have one funny tidbit, which is I love collecting stickers for my car. So I was really excited to go to Rainier today. I want to collect stickers from every national park I visit in my car. So I got really excited when I went to Rainier today because I got to put a new sticker on my car.
Nice. You know what else you can put on your car?
The ID, the Subaru ID thing.
That and also a John Freaking Muirpod sticker.
Oh, I didn't know that actually. That's great to know. And where can we find those? Just on the website?
It's on Instagram. So evidently you can't because you don't have an Instagram.
There we go. But I can use my friends.
And, you know, as an employee, an unpaid employee of the John Freaking Muir Pod, you should know that we have stickers. So there you go.
Yeah. So it's good to know. It's good to know.
Okay. Well, that's a wrap from the John Freaking Muir studio. Any shout outs to friends and family, Lupin?
Yeah, I would love to thank my mom and dad for like encouraging me if like not safely. They got me my Garmin, which is great. So my mom, dad, and my sister and my two best friends from high school, like AG and Emilia, they were the two people that I went on the Yosemite backpacking trip with, and they helped me start this amazing outdoor journey.
All right. Big shout out to them. Thank you for tuning in. Always remember the trail is the trail. It doesn't care if you want to go downhill. It doesn't care if it's almost dark and you're looking for a campsite. It doesn't even care if you're an intern at the John Freaking Muir Pod. The trail is the trail. Embrace the suck.